I am mining investor and editor of Resource Stock Digest, Gerardo Del Real here with a very special guest to get us up to date on all things crypto. I'm talking, of course, our in-house expert, Mr. Chris Curl. This is the 332nd episode of our weekly therapy session that we call Investing in Bizarro World, because that is indeed what we do. We're going to talk markets. We're going to talk gold, copper, uranium, some crypto action, some crypto picks from Mr. Curl, and a couple of updates on my end on the premium portion of the podcast. But first and foremost, Mr. Curl, thank you for joining me today. How are you?
Doing very well, Gerardo. How are you doing?
I am excellent. The wife still loves me. The babies are still healthy. I got the youngest is a senior in high school and driving. The oldest is thriving. The middle one is figuring life out and thriving and healthy as well. So, I mean, no complaints, right? Love and health and the rest of it we make up as we go. And hopefully we can provide a little bit of the wealth through this platform here. So long-winded way of saying I'm doing great, sir.
Great. That all sounds good. Sounds like even better than me.
I mean, it's all relative, Chris. It's all relative.
That's true.
Right?
There's always someone doing better. There's always someone doing worse. That's all you can say.
That's all you can say, right? My grandfather used to tell me all the time, mijo, when you get into a big, big brawl, you don't want to be the first guy there because you're a little on the small side, but you can't be the last guy there because you got a last name and a reputation to uphold. So just get somewhere in the middle and get busy.
That is wise advice.
Get in the arena. Let's talk about getting into the arena. We've had a consolidation in the gold space that is very similar to the consolidation that I've seen from a distance, from my non-expert view, in the Bitcoin space. And that being, you know, we rushed to new highs. There was excitement. Generalists started looking and paying attention. And then, of course, you know what happens right after that, right? You get a little bit of a consolidation. With gold, we've had a consolidation of roughly 3 months or so, where it's kind of teeter-tottering, trying to figure out whether it wants to be closer to 33 or closer to 34. 3,400 now seems to be a floor. We'll see how long that holds up, but for now, we're at 3,421, and it seems to be like gold is wanting to rush to the $35 level. I say that because silver, which has been stubborn below 39, is making another run at 40. It's trading at 39.05. So I say all that to say I think precious metals look bullish. How does the crypto space, and let's start with Bitcoin, look for you?
Well, that's a good question because, you know, Bitcoin was showing a lot of strength, hitting new all-time highs earlier in the year. This I predicted in both of my publications, in both Digital Dispatch and Crypto Cycle. I was outlining many of the reasons for Bitcoin to surge to new all-time highs. One of the big ones was simply the where we were in the market cycle, getting towards the end of the bull market cycle for crypto. That's often when you see coins hitting new all-time highs, as well as simply the institutional demand for Bitcoin with all of these treasury companies that we have now and the ETFs and governments talking about buying it. There's simply a supply shock. It's a supply and demand issue that was really stark a few months ago when I was really outlining it. If you're a Digital Dispatch subscriber, you can look at my last call-in where I was just the whole time I was outlining, hey, look, these are all the reasons Bitcoin's going to go up. And sure enough, we saw a huge surge for Bitcoin where it hit new all-time highs. It did retrace quite a bit. There was that was largely propelled by a Bitcoin whale. Whales are people who hold a lot of a cryptocurrency, dumping $577 million worth of Bitcoin in one transaction and then scooping up $2.2 billion worth of Ethereum, and then going on to sell even more Bitcoin, buy even more Ethereum, and then start selling off the Ethereum. So a big-time whale was kind of manipulating the markets to their benefit and liquidating a lot of leveraged positions because crypto is extremely levered up and everybody had these long positions out. They got liquidated, which caused Bitcoin to fall down to, I believe it hit around 109. It went below 100, well below 110, which I feel like is a pretty solid support level. It's regained that since and I think is going to hold and go higher, particularly as we get into Q4.
So where do you think we are in the cycle? One of the things that I really love about your product, me as a generalist, who just dabbles exclusively in the resource space, right? You are very pragmatic, cautious. I don't want to say conservative, but you definitely don't take the it's going to the moon forever approach. You're very methodical in the way that you look at the data and the way that you look at the technical levels. And so where do you think in the cycle, if we're going to use baseball parlance, is it the fourth inning? Is it the seventh inning? Is it the ninth inning as it relates to Bitcoin? And then we can talk about the more speculative stuff, because that, I imagine, is always going to be the first to kind of deflate, right? You start seeing it's kind of like the small caps when you're coming out of a bull market in the resource space. Those are the first ones where you see money, scared money, start to come out before the big liquid names start getting hit.
Sure. And historically speaking, based on previous cycles, we're around the 10th inning for Bitcoin bull market right now.
Okay.
So we're getting towards the end. I mean, historically, it's 80 weeks post-halving, you see a peak for Bitcoin, which corresponded in the last cycle to November of 2021, where Bitcoin briefly hit a new all-time high of 69,000, 2,000 higher than its previous high earlier in April of that year of 67,000. And many of the altcoins that had crashed 80 to 90% during that summer regained their losses and set even higher highs in that Q4. And I very much predict something similar to that happening this year, because essentially none of the 30 technical indicators that indicate a top for Bitcoin have been triggered. We haven't really had an alt season. We've had some head fakes. We've had some projects experience some growth, but there's been no alt season anything close to what we saw either in 2021 or in 2017, 2018. So I think there's still a lot of upside. Crypto is very explosive when it decides to go up or down in either direction. It does so very quickly, which is why you want to position yourself early and kind of weather out the really boring consolidation periods, which really the last year outside of the inaugural mania around Trump coin and everything, it's been kind of a very boring period of consolidation where Bitcoin has not done anything too crazy. Sure, it hit some new all-time highs recently, but I still think it's going to go considerably higher, most likely here in Q4, given the supply-demand imbalance that continues to be an issue, and the simple fact that cyclically, Bitcoin doesn't hit its most bullish phase until the period that we're coming up to here in Q4 of 2025. And that could follow. I mean, I don't know. September historically sees some pretty nasty sell-offs in the markets. I would say an absolute worst case scenario for Bitcoin in the next few weeks would be some kind of terrible black swan or market event that would cause Bitcoin to crash and equities to crash, which could see it. I would see hitting no lower than the CME gap around $92,000-$93,000. So that would be an absolute worst case scenario if there was a really bad September. But Q4, I see as very bullish for Bitcoin. 2026, I don't know. I'm not planning on holding a lot of crypto throughout the year of 2026.
Got it. So that's why you say, if we're talking baseball parlance, you think we're in the 10th.
A
little bit of game left, but not a lot.
No.
Okay, so you're being cautious, and in Q4 maybe a good time to take some money off the table and hedge those bets a little bit more.
Absolutely, and that's not only true for crypto. I mean, I took advantage in Digital Dispatch, which is the tech publication I run, to sell off some positions when the market was a bit frothy last month in July, and had some good points to sell some of the positions in that portfolio that I've been holding for a while. But yeah, after I think, you know, as always, seasonality says we're going to get some good pumps in Q4. We're also getting a little bit more of a dovish tone from Jerome Powell. And Fed, Trump
we're
getting, is...
We're going to get Trump, into that in a minute.
Yeah, but Trump is taking an even more aggressive stance against the Federal Reserve to get his way, which is a dovish Fed and dovish Fed governors who are MAGA friendly and will basically commit to his agenda without question, which are that's who Trump likes.
Let's get right into it. I mean, look, at for all of you that tune in for the commodity overview, I think gold continues higher. I think silver continues higher. Boring has been good. I think boring is going to be over very, very soon with September coming up. A lot of people get off vacation. Kids go back in school. People come back to the office and real capital starts coming back off sideline. It's looking to be redeployed. And the bottom line is, look, the overall indices are still holding in there robustly, but there is little by little, you're starting to see some sector rotation away from, you know, some of the bigger tech sectors and utilities and some of the other places, and seeing some of that money trickle into not just the commodity space, but also the crypto space with the recent pullback. So later on in the premium portion of this, I'm going to ask for a couple of recommendations for you, Chris, because if we have another quarter or so of really being able to make money in the crypto space, then for everyone that tuned in to the premium portion of the podcast, I'd love for them to be able to get a couple of names in there. So hopefully you don't mind that.
Not a problem at all.
All right. Let's talk about Mr. Trump, because as I've said before, regardless of how you feel about the politics or the parties, policy is consequential. And the commodities market, specifically gold, has showed us that it fully believes Trump's bluff, if you want to call it that, that he'll fight to keep a Fed governor fired, to put someone in place that is more friendly to him. And the Trump policy, I've stated for a while, is lower dollar and let's try to inflate the heck out of this debt, which it's not going to do. Without, you know, the bottom 99% really getting hurt in purchasing power wise. But that is the policy. Whether you like the policy or not, it's going to affect you. It's going to affect me. And we're either going to make money from it or not. How do you feel about him just even thinking that he can just fire a Fed governor when it's unprecedented?
Well, I have mixed feelings about that specifically because, I mean, as you know, Gerardo, I don't think anyone around here is a huge fan of the Federal Reserve Bank.
No.
I'm a largely
long proponent that it should go away, yeah.
Yeah, it's an unelected body. I don't believe that they serve the interests of the American public. They serve other interests, and much of what they do is rather hidden from the public. And much of what they do benefits international bankers, benefits the wealthy, benefits asset holders at the expense of regular people. So yeah, like I don't want to wear like kiddie gloves, you know, when it comes to going after the Fed, but it does coincide with Trump's kind of mafia boss tactics at the White House. Like he is going to bully people into doing what he wants, and he wants to feel like he's getting good deals. And he doesn't feel like the current Fed is accommodative enough. And he feels like inflation is not a problem. And he just wants asset prices to go up. He wants interest rates to be low so people can buy more things, including housing. And he wants asset prices to continue going up. And he wants to be able to, in the midterms, point at the economy and point at the stock market, which historically has been his report card for his presidency, particularly in his first term. He wants to point at that and be like, look at this, the stock market's never been higher. Housing prices have, everything's the highest it's ever been. Everything's the best it's ever been. And the only way he's going to get that is having the Federal Reserve that's very accommodative, that's very dovish, that's lowering interest rates, that might reverse the quantitative tightening that they've been doing over the last several years and do quantitative easing, which all of these things will be extremely inflationary, will crush anybody who works for a living and relies on wages for their livelihood.
Yep.
And will benefit the asset holding class. And that's why, for me personally, I got really into investing when all of this started the first time around during COVID in 2020, the writing was on the wall that you need to get into crypto, you need to get into certain equities, or you're going to be completely left behind. Because honestly, however, as bad as inflation has been, I thought it was going to be even worse. It's the U.S. economy has been a little bit more robust than I predicted. And some of that is due to Jerome Powell being firm in his conviction that the interest rates need to be a bit higher for longer to ensure that this inflation is fully under control and we don't have it come roaring back like what happened under Chairman Burns before Volcker took the wheel.
Yeah.
Something similar happened back in the 1970s. So I think
and for context, real quick, everyone, when Volcker came in, he ran the interest rates as high as 17%. That's what was required to break the back of stagflation and inflation at the time, yeah, where employment was slowing, inflation was taking off, and we had a similar setup. And so for anyone out there that's wondering what it would actually take to really get inflation under control, you're looking at an extreme, extreme acceleration of interest rate hikes, not interest rate cuts. And we're simply not going to get those. If anything,
it would cause a depression, probably.
Immediately. Yeah. That's not going to happen. So inflation won't get under control. I hate to give Jerome credit because I do believe the Fed should be abolished. And I do believe, I don't believe, by the way, that if you're going to have an institution like the Fed, an institution which I would rather see go away, I don't believe that we all of a sudden quit honoring the way that we go about electing officials and dismissing officials and allowing officials to supposedly do their job in an independent way outside of political influence. Now, we all know that's a sham, but if that's the sham that we all subscribe for, then lie to me, right? Don't start firing Fed governors. If that's the illusion that everybody wants to agree to live by, then don't go, you know, taking a 10% stake in Intel and saying that you want to do that across the board with other companies. There's a word for that, right? It ends with ism. And so, you know, what he brags about is the stuff that worries me the most. He's like, we didn't pay a penny. I just kind of forced their arm and they just gave me 10% of Intel. This is great. I'm going to do this across the board. So whether or not that's true, you know, whether or not he paid $10 or $11 billion or he paid zero, to me really is inconsequential. I don't believe, I really applauded the Department of Energy and the Department of Defense grants and loans to companies to recycle rare earth magnets and to establish a critical metals reserve, a uranium reserve. I applaud all of that because the mechanism by which that's been done is the mechanism that traditionally public-private partnerships have worked out well in that sense, right? But when you just start telling me that the president can start taking percentages of companies and have an influence as to how they operate, that doesn't seem very capitalistic to me in an already very flawed capitalist system that we have here in the U.S.
Well, that's true. The Intel thing is complex, too, because it's hardly the first time that the government has taken large stakes in important U.S. industries. I'm old enough to remember the auto bailouts of 2008, where I believe the federal government injected about $81 billion into GM and Chrysler specifically. I think they took a 61% stake in General Motors at the time. They took over Fannie and Freddie. And of course, during World War II, it goes back to Roosevelt and the World War II and putting entire businesses under the supervision of the government for wartime planning and production. It is by definition fascist in its actual methodology. So, I mean, you're correct there, but it's hardly something that's new. I think the thing that feels new about it is the fact that Trump seems to increasingly be running the United States as like a sovereign wealth fund where he wants everything to be profitable. Same thing with this, you know, Intel was already getting billions of dollars from taxpayers through the CHIPS Act.
Yep.
Trump looks at all that money going out from Biden and he says, well, how can the United States, how can the taxpayers get some of that back? And the answer in his mind is to get a percentage of Intel and, you know, have that as like a way to pay back the American taxpayers. Of course, all of this goes well beyond the mandate of the federal government as set out like in the Constitution, but we've abandoned that a long time ago. We're so far out to sea at this point that I think the pragmatic side of me can play devil's advocate a little bit and kind of at least see what Trump's motivation is for doing some of these things, I guess.
Yeah, no, look, it's definitely like fourth turning stuff. Some of the stuff we've seen versions of. I don't know that we've ever seen it under. There's war around the world, but a lot of the times that these provisions have been enacted or relied on, it's been during war or during, you know, the potential for the American automotive industry to completely fail. Right. And in this situation, I guess the part that really bothers me is here's a very profitable company just doing business all around the world. And here comes the administration twisting arms saying, hey, you're gonna give me 10%, or guess what? You might not be able to buy some of those chips that you need so much. You might not be able to do business in this area over here that is a big part of your market share. And that's the part that's seems kind of fascist to me.
Yeah, it's very mafia like.
For sure. Well, let's I want to make sure that we're respectful of people's time. Let's get to the premium portion of the podcast because I want to get some picks from you in the crypto space. Again, I am Gerardo Del Real along with Mr. Chris Curl. This was the 332nd episode of our weekly therapy session called Investing in Bizarro World. Thanks, y'all. Have a great week. Enjoy the end of the month. I will be out next week, but Mr. Hodge will be back. So you know how it goes, everybody. Busy season. Have a great one.